Hi, it's Monday afternoon. I want to say a few words about the interesting current situation. It's a little bit tied with the Parsha of the week. Actually, that's what led me to think about it, although this is not the Parsha podcast, at least not that I'm planning yet. But it's being very generously sponsored by David Markowitz, who was at my house the other day, dropped something off, and some at the Morty Pidyon HaBen. Thank you very much, very kind. And I'm glad we have listeners all over the place. I don't have anybody yet for the Parsha or the Haftorah, or even for the Bio, but it's only Monday, so hopefully it'll work out. Let me get right to it. You know, this week is Kisavo, and therefore it's the Tocha. But on the other hand, Tocha is full of all kind of curses, as we know. And looking in current events and the news, I saw it online, and then I looked, and it's a general line. At the very beginning, by the way, you have... at the beginning of the Tochacha, that, you know, where it says, Arura Toba Soda, or Toba, you know, Baba Ear, and all that stuff, and your crops will be cursed, and all the rest of it. And one of the ways is that God will send all kind of confusion and stuff like that, whatever it means. And there'll be plagues, and Shachevis, Gadachas. And then it says, Shomecha, Asher Roshcha, Nechoshes, Rashi, Tachtecha, Barzel. That's very interesting. The skies will become Nechoshes. And the arts will become barzel. In other words, no rain, and therefore no crops. The sky will be as if it was iron, and therefore there's no rain, and therefore the earth will be as if it's nechoshes or whatever the lashon is. So in other words, it'd be no rain, drought. That, my friends, is going on as we speak right now in the Middle East. It's very interesting to me because, as I've said over and over again, Israel's fighting a war on 100 fronts. Now, finally, for some reason, they seem to have recognized that there's an eighth front, as they call it now, which is PR. And I see Bibi's trying to go a little bit here and there, get on whatever talk shows, you know, that he considers will be friendly to Israel, something like that. But they're making some kind of an effort. And he's like a one-man show, and very far from perfect. But, you know, at least he's on message. But as we know, in America... politically, Israel's crashing. And in Europe, there's nothing to talk about. And it's just a bummer. And the Arabs, of course, are you know, chortling, rubbing their hands in glee. And Iran and other countries are standing in the rear saying, let the Arabs go fight it out. Let Israel lose more and more men. Then we'll attack them. Like in World War II, you know, let the other side bleed to death as much as they can. And then whatever's left, then we'll attack them. That's what I think will happen. Timothy Rand and the Houthis and this, that, and the other. And it doesn't look great because Israel was a small country surrounded by a million people, as we all know, and so forth and so on. Okay. So where does it go? To put the firm answer on it, and I mean this seriously, you know, you say, you look for some kind of divine help because Derech HaTeva, it ain't great. And you sometimes see divine intervention. I say again, you can see it. To me, anyway. And it just comes to my mind when I'm looking this week. And part of the curse of the Tocha, and a very powerful one, is there'll be no rain. Therefore, people die from starvation. That's going on right now as we speak. If you look online, I'm just pulling up here. All I have to do is just Google drought and this country, drought and that country. So, for example, let's see over here, Syria, where is it? Yeah, here we go. Syria's in a serious drought, okay? And so is, here we go. The worst drought in decades is gripping much of the Eastern Mediterranean, and it's particularly dire in Syria, where they say rainfall is declining, et cetera, and therefore the crops are going down the tubes. In other words, you can have mass starvation in Syria. Then I asked myself, new one, what's next door to Iraq? I'm looking at Chatham House. He says, same thing, Iraq, water crisis damned by neighbors and failed by leaders. That's damned with D-A-M-M-E-D, which means that Iraq and Syria, by the way, depend on the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, if you look at the geography. But the source of the Tigris and Euphrates rivers are like in Turkey and Iran, and they're using more of their water. Therefore, there's less to go for Iraq and Syria, who have big populations. And if you just Google, like all I'm doing, you know, all you have to do is Google drought and this country, drought in that country, and you see that it's causing domestic violence and it's causing, displaced families here. Along the southern Euphrates, more than 10,000 families in Iraq have been displaced because of shrinking rivers and dying marshes. So what you and I think of, the Nahar, Hidekel, and Pras, the big river and all the rest of it, it might not be. Just the same way we see the Dead Sea is dying in Israel, you know what I mean? It looks like the southern part of the Tigris and Euphrates are dying in Syria and Egypt, which means these countries, which would like to wipe out Israel and just listen to them all the time, they might have bigger problems on their hands. And then I ask myself, Neil, what's going on with Iran? And I think you know that Iran is almost out of water. I mean, it sounds like I'm saying crazy. And I just pulled up an article over here. Listen to this. Iranian expert accuses the U.S. and Israel of cloud theft as water crisis near its breaking point. And this was from late July or something like that. And basically, he's saying like this, Israel stole the clouds. I kid you not, right? And he says, I don't care what anybody says. And it's actually on memory, you know, online. I say this with confidence. You can see in satellite images how the clouds shift from their course. I don't care how many people say this is normal. I say it's not normal. Blah, blah, blah. So in other words, basically, they're arguing over the deck chairs on the Titanic, as the expression goes, because they're facing big crises. They must figure they have some way out. I don't know what it is. And Israel's also part of this, I'm sorry to say. Notice this is something that hit the region. And so if you look in Eretz Yisrael itself, again, there's gigantic problems with the water, okay? And again, I'm just looking at an article. Israel faces unprecedented drought crisis as water shortages loom. And in Iran and Iraq and Syria, the air conditioning doesn't even work. So their mom is going crazy. It's 120 degrees. I'm serious. 50 degrees Celsius. It's 120 degrees. And what I'm saying is you can't fight a war if you don't have water. Now, what these countries will do is they'll say, well, we'll save the water for the soldiers. That's how they operate over there. And the heck with everybody else. Okay, but what happens when you start to have millions of people dying? What's your plan? Now, are they going to be so nuts as to say, in a kind of reverse Samson way, Tomas Nafshim Israel, you know? In other words, as long as we take down Israel, we don't care about the other things, you know? Or are there people going to rise up against them? That's why Bibi went on a broadcast or something to the Iranian people to say, you know, get rid of your government, Israel, help you with the water. It sounds a little crazy, but it'll sound less crazy as time goes on. And people are banging at government doors because they simply don't have enough water. Now, in the case of Israel, as far as I understand, this can be solved with money. And what I mean by that is Israel's a big expert in desalination. So in other words, you build a special facility along the Mediterranean shore and you process the salt water, you know, as you make it drinkable. And Israel's been working on this since the 1950s, I remember. So by now they figure out what to do. It's just a question of committing a lot of money. I hear that. So it's funny to see all this in the context of the Toch, which says that the curse will be that one of the signs of living in a cursed, in a tochacha type situation is drought, which in that part of the world is no joke. Now, will people run away from the Middle East and go to Europe? That's very possible. So that'll increase the problem the Europeans have with immigrants from the Middle East. I get it. Or not, you know, or are they saying not because they have too many already. And a friend of mine just sent me something that in France, they're threatening to burn down Notre Dame Cathedral, the Muslims, or some of the jihadis. It's what it is. So we live in crazy times. Now, the reason I say this is, I always look, it's just my predisposition, you have to see closely what the political situation is going on. But then you also have to see closely and look for it where the Baruch Shalom intervenes. When things don't go regular, that's where you see divine intervention. That's my theory. You can argue that you see divine thing in everything, and I understand that way of thinking, but you don't really. Right? Usually, Olam Kevin Hago Noeg, and that's the way it appears. But when we see something that doesn't make exact sense, and happens anyway, then I see the hand of God. Then something's in there. I noticed this for the first time in 1990 or 91, when Bush let Saddam Hussein go. He totally busted his army back then, and Israel was saved, by the way, and they were smashed, and then he let him go. The Americans pulled out of Iraq. Now, in light of what happened with Bush Jr., that wasn't a dumb thing that Bush Sr. did. But nevertheless, it made no sense. And I remember saying to somebody at that time, they disagreed with me, that you'll see this will come, there's a divine plan in this, because the Saddam Hussein thing, you know, will play out later. And sure enough, a decade and a half later came the second Iraq war, which resulted in, you know, a huge number of consequences that we're still living with today. In the same way, it seems to me, I could be wrong, of course, but it seems to me that when you look at the fact that doesn't make any sense, which is countries that are dealing with existential problems, the Hainu that, you know, they have no water, and it's very limited supply, and the population is increasing all the time. They have no, there's no steps in those countries to decrease the population or have what you have like in these other countries, zero population, all the rest of it. And even so, Iraq has 47 million people, okay, which once upon a time they had like 2 or 3 million people. So where's it going? If they don't care, Iran is a perfect example. They're pouring so much money and resources into screwing Israel and getting better missiles and all this other junk. Meanwhile, the people are going to die from the drought. And the only thing they can do is blame it on Israel, right? Instead of solving the problem. The only thing you can do with these sorts of things. There's got to be a reason for it. It doesn't make any sense. Usually, countries look after number one. And they'll engage in all kind of alliances and shifting politics to serve number one. And that's the normal way. You understand? How did Palmerston say it? England has no permanent friends, and England has no permanent enemies. England has permanent interests. So Iran is the same thing, or any country. Iran has no permanent friends, no permanent enemies. It has permanent interests. For some reason, they don't agree with what I just said. And they say, no, the destruction of Israel and all that kind of stuff is taking priority over, you know, taking care of their own people. And these other countries are the same. I'm talking about Syria, Iraq, and, you know, some of the others. I don't know if Lebanon's hit with this, because Lebanon has a lot of mountains, so maybe they have more water. That's what I would imagine. But Eretz Yisrael, the state of Israel, doesn't. Israel has more people than ever before in its history, probably. Between 7.5 million Israelis and probably another 7.5 million Arabs, I guess. And then in Jordan, you have more people drinking from the Jordan River and those kind of water sources than ever. And ends up like Malthus said, you know, long ago, Thomas Malthus, that he said, not enough for everybody. And then what happens? You know what I'm saying? What's the plan then? So theoretically, if you'll say, okay, we'll leave Israel alone for 5 years or 10 years till they fix and install desalination plants all over Syria and Iraq and all over the place, because Israel could do it, and then we'll attack them. But they're not doing that. They're saying, no, we want to fight them now. We want to destroy them now. So it's like they say, Ava Makalkelis is Ashura, Vesina Makalkelis is Ashura. That, you know, extreme hatred, extreme love can mess you up. Yeah, here it is. Washington, his farewell address, which is written by Hamilton, but nevertheless, is a big chachma. You should read it if you're interested in chachma. Washington said, the nation which indulges towards another nation a habitual hatred or a habitual fondness is in some degree a slave. It is a slave to its animosity or to its affection, either of which is sufficient to lead it astray from its duty and its interest. Antipathy in one nation against another disposes each more readily to offer insult and injury, to lay hold of slight causes of umbrage, and to be haughty and intractable when accidental or trifling occasions of dispute occur. So that's a big chachma, because are you governed by your passions or not? Now, to tell you the truth, the Tucker Carlson guys and all this are saying this America's problem, that they're too fond of Israel. That's a separate discussion. I get that. I do get that. But it's certainly the case that these Arab countries and these Muslim countries in general are indulging a habitual hatred and are slaves to animosity. And it is leading, as Washington said, to lead it astray from its duty and its interest, okay? Because you're suffering from, you know, no food and no water. And when there's no water, there's not going to be any food, okay? And meanwhile, you don't care. You're trying to burn down the barn. You know, by the way, take a look at the Chaim V'lozhiner, I think it is, in the Drasha of Rosh Hashanah, it just occurred to me. He talks about people worrying about Olam Hazeh on Yom HaDin is like the farmer who burns down the barn to get, you know, to get rid of the mosquito or something like that. In other words, success in life often consists of identifying essentials and pursuing the essentials and being willing to sacrifice the inessential when necessary. And you certainly don't see that in politics, okay? It takes a big chachma to be able to handle something like that, and you don't see it too often. And so when I see over here that Moshe Rabbeinu is warning what kind of terrible things can happen, and Israel is located in the Middle East, so Moshe Rabbeinu is talking about the Middle East, and he says, among other things, that the skies will turn into Nechoshes, and the land underneath will turn into Barzel, and the Matar shall be Avak V'Ofar, then instead of raining, as some of Farshim say, instead of raining the water, it'll rain Avak V'Ofar, which, by the way, happened in the Dust Bowl. And, in, you know, I mean, that happens when you have droughts. That's the meaning. That when you have droughts, then, you know, everything becomes very sandy and dusty, and it destroys crops from the dust. We had it in this country. Look up Grapes of Wrath, you know. In other words, at the same time that there was the Great Depression, happened to have also a big Dust Bowl and wiped out farmers by the zillions. That's the whole Grapes of Wrath. The farm family tried to run away to California to start again. Because in the Midwest, it was destroyed by these, whatever they call it. I'm not an agriculturist. But I don't have to be. I live in a city. Moshe Rabbeinu is talking about the Jews who are going to live in agriculture. And you're going to see more and more, if this keeps up, now, maybe that's why God is creating climate change. I don't know. Obviously, I don't know. But isn't it interesting, right? Isn't it interesting that you never heard before about the temperatures going up like this, what they call the climate warming and all this other business? And you do see it, especially in the Middle East. And they should be spending all their time, since they're increasing their population, on food and water and things like that. I'm very serious, right? And instead, they're behaving like they did 100 years ago when they had a small population and it didn't matter too much, in terms of having enough food and water, because they did. And they want to carry on like they always did. What did they do? They have a jihad here and another thing there and keep it up. And the modern conditions don't allow for that. They don't see it that way. They don't see it that way. So we're in for interesting times in this part of the world. And again, just Google. In fact, you can do it every day or every week and see what's holding with the drought situation in all these countries. And I don't know if they have a solution. Now, America can send them food, dry food. We've done that for over 100 years. I mean that literally. We've done that for over 100 years, 100 and some years. But, you know, America fed the world. They send them food for free, okay? This country's got a lot of surplus. Especially ever since World War II, especially since World War II, they sent free. You know, in Israel, when Israel started in 1940, 49, they didn't have enough food. America had to send them a lot of food. Big ships loaded with, food all the time. Matter of fact, they're whole shilas from the kashrus point of view that year. Because I remember America sent them, as a chesed, powdered eggs and powdered milk and things like that. And, you know, is it Chav Yisrael? Is it this? Is it that? You know what I mean? You had all these issues. But it's because they were, doing. But how do you send water? You get what I'm saying? America can't send Syria or Iraq with 50 million people. Can't send them water, right? Not enough. You understand? So what's the plan? Okay? I raise this because you see that, as is often the case, I don't know how it's going to play out, obviously, but I remember where you heard this. This is going to affect, in some sense or another, the Arab-Israeli conflict. And Egypt, by the way, has its own problems, as I said a number of times, with the Nile River being stopped up in lower in Africa. Water is going to be playing a big role in the near future, I predict, in the Middle East. That will affect the Middle Eastern conflict. How exactly, I don't know. But I see that we're not living in regular times. And And we're going to see, you know, Erena Niflos, as they say. So I don't know how it's going to play out, but it seems that it's going to play out. I just wanted to share those few ideas with you. Again, I want to thank David Markowitz for sponsoring. And I hope we'll get people for the rest of the week. And with that, I wish you all a good day.